Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another exciting episode of Views on View. I am Steve Edwards, the host with the face for radio and the voice for being a mime, but I'm still your host. And with me on my panel today is the always exciting Luke Diebold. Say hi, Luke.
Hello, everybody from Australia.
Yes, we are truly a multinational podcast. Now, we also have another host who isn't here today, who's also from Africa. So we are spanning the globe to bring you the best in Vue.js development. And today with us as our very special guest, we have Joe Zimmerman. Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing well.
When I went freelance, I was still only a few years into my development career. My first contract, I was paid $60 an hour. Due to feedback from my friends, I raised it to $120 an hour on the next contract. And due to the podcasts I was involved in and the screencasts I had made in the past, I started getting calls from people I'd never even heard of who wanted me to do development work for them because I had done that kind of work or talked about or demonstrated that kind of work in the videos and podcasts that I was making. Within a year, I was able to more than double my freelancing rates, and I had more work than I could handle. If you're thinking about freelancing or have a profitable but not busy or fulfilling freelance practice, let me show you how to do it in my Dev Heroes Accelerator. Dev Heroes aren't just people who devs admire. They're also people who deliver for clients who know, like, and trust them. Let me help you double your income and fill your slowdowns. You can learn more at devheroesaccelerator.com.
So Joe is here to talk to us about the future of stores in Vuex. And that doesn't mean your local grocery store or any other type of store like that. It means state management, currently what we use Vuex for. So we're going to talk about some alternatives there. So to start out, Joe, why don't you give us a little bit of a background on yourself, why you're famous, what you do, where you do it, how you do it, et cetera.
Okay. Well, I've been doing web development since I was 12 years old, found an HTML book on my dad's shelf and just picked it up and started doing it. I have a twin brother who picked up a Visual Basic book, so he started programming first, if you don't consider HTML and CSS programming languages.
Boy, there's a whole can of worms right there.
Yeah. He was doing behavioral programming before me. I was just building pages.
What is behavioral programming? Is that programming to make you behave like, in school or what?
Functional, whatever. Making things happen rather than just things showing up.
Oh, good stuff. All righty. So you've been doing web since you were 12. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So you said, why am I famous? I don't believe that I am.
Well, you will be after this.
I've, in about 2012, I started writing for my own blog, joezimjs.com. And I was writing about twice a week for about 2 years or something. And then I just kind of burnt out on it and stopped. But every once in a while, I'll write an article for Smashing Magazine. And that's how you guys found me.
Smashing Magazine, yes. So article, what is coming to Vuex? So, okay, so we're going to talk about state management. So to start out, as I always like to do, let's lay the groundwork. What is state in a JavaScript application and how does Vuex fit into that?
Going for the nice abstract questions.
Okay. Yes.
State is kind of like status. It's the data and information about what you're seeing on your screen and controlling how the application works.
Yeah, I always think to think of it and this may or may not be the best description, is just sort of an extra bucket out there between your application and, say, your backend stored in the browser, where you can hold all kinds of stuff that you may need or not need in various components and so on. I don't know if that's an accurate description, but it helps me think about it that way.
I mean, just real quick, fast ways, just to say data, I guess, if you don't want to bother what kind of state.
Right. And so differing frameworks will have different tools for state management. React has Redux, is probably the most popular one, at least maybe more well-known. And Vue uses what's called Vuex. And state is, I guess, one of the things that for those who might be new to Vue is sort of I see it as sort of the third step for managing data as being passed between components. So your first option generally when you're dealing with maybe a parent-child is props, where you can pass data from one component to another component that might need it, and then you can use events to pass if you need to go up the chain. But that runs into limitations when you start getting multiple components, maybe multiple levels down, or components, sibling components, you run into issues. So then you can resort to the event bus, or as the WHO would call it, the magic bus, and use that sort of as an intermediary to pass data between components. But then you start running into limitations. So now we get into state management, where sort of this external bucket off to the side that you can use to put data in and get data out and do the hokey pokey and so on. So, and then within your state, you have Vuex as it currently is, you have your getters, your actions, and your mutations, where mutations is where state data is actually changed. You don't change it in an action or a getter. Getters is just to retrieve it and pass it off to your component, however you access it. And then your actions allow you to asynchronously get data and pass it to your mutations. So hopefully that is clear as mud for everybody who wants to understand Vuex. So up to this point, with Vuex 2 and then has been pretty much the dominant one for Vue 2, obviously. And now with Vue 3 coming out, we're starting to see more options. So you want to talk about the new developments in Vuex, Joe?
Yeah, sure. So originally, or all the way up through Vuex version 4, the way Vuex is built is what a lot of people call it slightly, kind of verbose. So you specify what is the state, what are the getters, what are the mutation functions, and what are action functions, which are anything that you do related to the data, but that doesn't actually mutate the data. And it makes a lot of sense to have those different separated pieces. And it worked really well, but like calling them has been always one of my least favorite things. It's like you can't just reference one of the action functions directly. You have to do a dispatch of an action, in which case you're passing in the name of the action as a string, which means you don't have type safety, you don't have IEDE support.
I don't understand. Are you okay? In my experience, using in a couple large applications, if I use map actions in a component, then I'm basically calling it as a method on my component object. Is that different than what you're talking about? Or,
well, I'm talking about if you're working with it directly, rather than using the map helpers. Mm-hmm. So, which sometimes you need to if you're creating a more complex function. I don't know. Also, so right now what they're trying to do is make Vuex 1 work better with TypeScript. So and so that you have, exactly what the function is going to take as arguments, exactly what it's going to return, the names of it. You don't have to go looking through your code. It'll show up in the IDE and tell you what you need to know and tell you if you're getting it wrong. So that's one of the biggest benefits that they're working on for the update to in Vuex 5. The other thing is just trying to simplify things. A lot of people were saying the mutations were a bit verbose, like having to explicitly state that you're doing a mutation rather than just editing the state within an action, which I kind of agree with. It's they're they're useful, especially with the dev tools, for being able to see which mutations happen and when. But they are also kind of unnecessary. Because we have the reactive data, we can just make changes to the data and it reacts to it. So we don't need to be like what with Redux or something, where you're actually saying, this is where we're actually changing the data, and so you know when and where it's changing. The reactivity system in Vue kind of makes it a moot point.
So quick question. Now, the difference between, and I mentioned this briefly earlier, is that the difference between mutations and actions in the current versions of UX is that mutations are synchronous and actions are asynchronous. So how is that? How would that be addressed?
Well, it's not. Actions are allowed to be asynchronous and mutations are not allowed to be synchronous. Actions do not necessarily need to be synchronous.
True.
So actions are just the methods that you actually call from outside the store to actually, and generally to bring multiple steps into a change that you're making in the store, rather than calling multiple or writing the functionality yourself in every component that uses it. Whereas a mutation is just there to make the change to the state.
Yeah, that makes sense. One of the things that I was kind of, I guess, playing devil's advocate here, that I was a little bit worried about, sort of, if we merge these two together, is I think when I was first starting out by learning Vue, the separation of actions and mutations, even though it felt like a little bit convoluted, it also helped me to kind of break my code apart. So it kind of helped me to think, oh, this is where I'm doing my request to the server, because that's the most common case I can think. I think that most people use actions, at least to begin with, is they'll make a request to the server. And as a result of that, you then do a mutation that, you know, mutates the store, changes some data in the store. Do you think that that could eventually cause, like, do you think we might be losing something there, that people won't kind of be nudged towards separating their code in that way? Or that it doesn't really matter so much?
I think probably 95% of the time, it's not going to matter that much. There's probably some cases where that separation and clarity could help. And I think one of the big places where it can help is inside the Vue dev tools, where you have the time travel and everything. When you just call an action, you'll just see the action and then the state change, the full state change log. Whereas if you actually have mutations, you can see every single individual mutation that happens with a name to it. So in that sense, debugging and stuff is easier with mutations. But I haven't run into any cases where that would have been a big detriment to me to not have mutations so far.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Yeah, I just think it's interesting sort of that they're simplifying things a little bit. And it's also kind of cool because it gives us a little bit more flexibility as developers. So if you do want to sort of implement your own concept of mutations or kind of enforce that on your team, you can. But they're not basically saying, hey, everybody, you have to do it this way. It's kind of getting it feels like it's getting a little bit lower level, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. And by removing mutations, stores look a lot more like components. You have data and state are parallels. Then there's the getters and computed are parallel, and there's methods and actions. Although with the new composition API, you're not using those as much in components, but you still understand the parallels and you can see the connection between them.
Yeah. Actually, I remember looking at the RFC for the first time and thinking, this kind of looks like the options API with things named slightly differently. It's almost like state is just your data, and then actions are just your methods, and getters are just your computed properties. It almost felt exactly like that, which was really nice. You know, it's just like moving that logic to, I guess, as Steve put it before, like another bucket, which feels really nice.
It's interesting because I've actually seen people use like renderless components as an alternative to Vue.X. Like it's just a component that does all the state management. You call functions on it, but you're using the data and you're using computed and you're using methods instead of using state getters and actions.
That seems an interesting way to use a component
just for managing state when you could almost do that with just like a helper, you know, library with methods in it. But
I wouldn't recommend it. It was mostly just a guy trying to say, hey, you don't need to install Vuex if you want to save a few bytes or whatever.
Right. Okay. So now your article is talking about Vuex 5, but let's talk about a couple of different options before we get there. So one, there's an article that I know I've seen in the past. It was written last year about with Vue 3, you might not need Vuex because you could do some things there. Mm-hmm. And then there's also Pinia, I'm guessing is how we'd say it. So why don't you elaborate on those for a bit?
So yeah, I've been seeing a lot of articles about just using the composition API and creating the separate composition functions for essentially creating your own stores that way. And it's simple enough and it works really well. My biggest issue I always had with it was the lack of DevTools support, because I always loved Vuex's DevTools. So if you want that level of debugging power within the DevTools, then your Vuex has always been your only choice. And it's interesting because after I wrote this article for Smashing Magazine, I went and tried to essentially recreate Vuex 5, a simple version, to make it work like that, and figure out how to integrate it into the DevTools. But like, I don't see any of these libraries actually integrating into the DevTools. It can't be that it only works for Vuex. You have to be able to do it, make it work yourself, right? Well, there's no documentation that I could find for it. So you're basically just reading through Vuex code and trying to figure out where it's hooking into the DevTools and how you can use it. So I was never actually able to figure it out. And then the day that you guys invited me to the podcast, I saw this article about Pinia. And Pinia is sort of an alternative to Vuex. It was actually written by one of the Vue.js core team developers as a way to test out a proposal for the next iteration of Vuex. So essentially, it's Vuex 5 today. From what I can see there, I can't personally see any differences from what I looked at, but it says in the description that there's an open RFC for Vuex 5 with an API very similar to the one used by Pinia. So I'm assuming there are differences. Otherwise, they would probably just take Pinia and say, hey, let's release this as Vuex 5 right now. But yeah, it does exactly what I described in the article about Vuex 5. Because it's written by a Vue core team member, it's got integration into the DevTools. So personally, I'm going to be moving to Pinia, at least until Vuex 5 comes out.
So from what I was reading, one of the bigger differences between Pinia and current state management is that currently it just defines one big store, and you can then modularize it if you want to, but you still have an overall parent store. Whereas with Pinia, everything is modular, and then you choose to join them up later.
Yeah. Instead of like when you use Vuex, you essentially do app.useVuex, and suddenly now the store is available on every component under the $store property name. That's not how you use Pinia or Vuex 5. You actually import the individual store module that you want to use.
One of the reasons I really like this, it allows you to start grouping your logic in a much more sort of sensical way. I don't know if you guys would agree with that. It almost feels a little bit weird to try and group, for example, in larger applications where things are organized more by domain. It's kind of hard to group your store information with your components, so like with your domain, but doing it this way, it just makes so much sense, you know. And
as far as where you're storing the files themselves?
Yeah, where you're storing the files themselves, whether or not you want to include those modules. It's like I'm pretty sure this kind of thing is possible with Vuex, but it just feels a lot more natural when you're doing it in this way. It's almost like a store just feels like its own kind of a store for a piece of data, for example, to-do items or like, yeah, to-do items in a to-do list. It feels like you can easily put that in its own place and then have like the user sitting in its own place. And they feel a lot more pulled apart and separated. Whereas in, you know, the current Vuex, that doesn't feel so natural. Does that kind of make sense?
Right. I mean, the current Vuex has the idea of namespaced modules, but it's a lot more clunky to work with, especially like when you're trying to use, when you're trying to touch state or an action or something on it, you have to go through the namespacing and everything, which if I remember correctly, is using a slash between them. Like it's yeah, not as natural. Like I want to just use dot notation and get down to the module and then call methods directly on it. Well, now you can just import the one that you want and use it. And the other nice thing I think is if you end up no longer using a store module, even if you don't delete the file, it won't get built into your application build because nothing's importing it. Whereas if you're using Vuex, you'll import it all usually into one big store file. And if just because you stop using it doesn't mean it goes away. You actually have to go explicitly remove it from the store file. And you could forget that.
Yeah, there's ways around that. I know that in my application, we'll dynamically register stores and unregister them as needed. So for what it's worth, there are ways around that's a little more work, obviously, to do something like that, because you don't have like a fixed file that you can go look at. But yeah, there are ways around that issue with the current view as well.
Yeah, I guess the decoupling feels a lot more natural and a lot easier to do with these more modern, with Vuex 5. At least from what I've read in the RFC, which is pretty cool and really exciting for larger applications.
Hey folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
Okay, so there's Penis. So now we'll get to the meat of things. What's coming down the road in Vuex 5?
Well, same as what's available in Pina.
Wow, talk about letting the air out of my balloon there. That was...
That's what the article was all about, is just and what we've been talking about, the simplification, modularization, using the built-in composition functions rather than the configuration style of Vuex, removing mutations.
So we've got Vuex 5, you've got Pina, and there's an article that we mentioned about being able to use the composition API to do some state management, although that is not going to scale quite as well as some of the other ones. So one of the nice things about Vue, and I think it was a conscious decision that was made from the beginning to avoid having what is true in the React ecosystem, where you got a bazillion different ways to do something and, you know, you just sort of figure what's the most popular, which you like best. And so they've made, specifically with the router and with Vuex, these are what we use for the core view. So how do you see, any sort of, what's the term I'm looking for, fracturing of state to have multiple options? Or do you think maybe the Pina was just sort of, let's throw it out there, see what happens and merge that with Vuex 5 and then it'll go away? Or how do you see that happening?
I don't remember. I don't believe anyone mentioned anything about trying to keep an older version. I think...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Or maybe they did, but I think once they move to Vuex 5, I think they're just going to be moving to the new API, assuming that's what they end up settling on. Because it's still an RFC. It's not settled. It's not even built unless you count Pina as being VX5 already built. Mm-hmm. So we don't even know for sure that this is going to be happening, but I think a lot of people will be getting behind this and will prefer it for the most part. So I don't see them wanting to keep around the old style of UX.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm looking at the releases on Pini. It looks like last week they did a version two beta one and a version two beta two. So it's at least had a couple solid releases, it seems like.
Yeah, well, I think version two is compatible with Vue 3 and version one is compatible with Vue 2. I think that's how it works.
Oh, and the Pina versions? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Pina 2 is for Vue 3 and Pina 1 is for Vue 2. Yep.
Gotcha. Okay. Luke, any other questions? Yes, you do. All right.
Yeah. I'm curious. Do you think that we'll see situations where it will make sense to manage state with the composition API, perhaps for like medium-sized projects? And the reason I ask this is because it almost seems like there's a few different levels where you can handle state. You can handle it on a component level, which makes the most sense for a lot of scenarios where it's just, you know, state that's very specific to that component. But then, like, I've also seen people using the composition API and things like provide and inject to then kind of, it's kind of like another way of handling state management. And then from there on, you can then move on to something like Vue X5 or Pina. So do you think that there's a place for using the composition API, or would you recommend if somebody feels like they need global state, they just move to something like Pina or Vue X5 when it's released?
I mean, Pina, if you look at the API for writing it, it feels like you're just using the component API. So it's very, very similar already. Just gives you some extra functionality. So the only reason I would say not to use it over the composition API is because you're really, really trying to keep file size down. So if you have a really small app and you just like, I don't really need to install Pina for a little bit of extra state management, there's just a few little pieces of global state that's being shared, so it doesn't really matter, then yeah, go ahead and skip out on Pina and revel in your tiny file size.
Yeah, totally. I think that's totally fair. And I think you run into a lot of problems with things like SSR as well, if you're trying to sort of roll your own. Yeah, and I guess another issue is if you roll your own, then anybody that comes onto your team will, you know, unless you've got an amazing documentation team, you know, behind you that can sort of follow in your shadow and write up beautiful documentation on everything you do, you don't have the learning resource that you have with something like Pina or something that already exists out there.
So yeah, that absolutely. As well.
Right on. So was there anything else you wanted to cover about to this that we missed, Joe?
Well, that's all I had written down in my notes as far as state management.
Right on.
I'm also curious to know, are you using these concepts in any of your own projects now? Like, have you started any new projects with Pina or implemented it into one and migrated over to Pina?
I'm going to. I have not yet. I'm a perpetual procrastinator. And I don't use Vue at work, so I don't have as much opportunity to use stuff like this as I'd like. But yeah, I think was it 2013? I built a really small prototype version of an app, an app using Socket.js that you can use to control Minecraft servers.
Oh, and my son would love that.
And I've been meaning to rewrite that as a nice big full application ever since. I was going to do it in Backbone for the longest time, and then I learned Marionette on top of Backbone. I'm like, oh, I'm going to do it this, and then I get like 5% in, and then put it off. And then, so I've actually got like 4 or 5 different versions of the app started and never actually anywhere near finished, but that's, I plan to.
Join the crowd. The side projects are half completed and sitting all over the place.
No.
Isn't that an annoying feeling where like at work at the moment, we're currently on Vue 2 and we started using the composition API and we're like, me and the guy I work with, we are so excited to move to Vue 3 and we're doing like these little experiments before work to make sure we're ready. But all the code for now is still on Vue 2 and we're just waiting for the stable release of Quasar before upgrading, which is just around the corner. But you're on edge. There's this excitement. You can't wait to use these new technologies and you can't wait to dive in and, you know, have all of this cool stuff available to you, but you kind of have to like, just have to wait that little bit longer. So yeah.
Yeah.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. And being I pretty avidly am reading articles about new stuff all the time. And if I never actually get around to building anything, I'm in a perpetual state of wishing I could try out all these technologies. I probably have like 40 technologies on the back burner waiting for me to try them, but I don't even get past the setup stage.
Yes, the developers.
Yeah, we need a shirt. Just build it or something like that.
Oh yeah,
like instead of just do it.
I saw this blog post on Medium years ago, and I've looked for it, and I haven't been able to find it. And it had this great graphic that shows, it's sort of a cartoon. It shows developers like sitting in front of this big, you know, area of land, and it has, it portrays each project as like a house. So you have all these half and three quarter built houses all over the place, you know, where nothing's completed and everything's just a percentage of the way there. And I'd love to find that cartoon because it was so good. By the way, yeah. If any Views on Vue listeners know where that cartoon or blog post is on Medium, feel free to message me at Wonder95.
Hey folks, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been working a lot on figuring out how to help people become the most valuable developers on their teams or becoming the top 5% of developers in the field. If you're looking to level up, figure out how to contribute more, get the career you want, get the career that you want that will support the lifestyle you want, then you should check out the Most Valuable Dev Summit. I've invited some of my friends across the community, people that you've heard of, people that have worked on systems that you use on a daily basis, people who have invented new ways of doing things over the years in programming, and I've asked them one question, and that question is, how do you become a top 5% developer? How do you become 1 in 20 of the best developers out there? And so we're going to go ahead and have that conversation with them in interviews on the Most Valuable Dev Summit. And you can find that at summit.mostvaluable.dev.
All right. So with that, we will move on to picks. So picks are where we get to talk about things that are something else other than Vue, or it can be Vue, our choice. I, in my, I don't know what you'd call it, weirdness, have started a regular series of dad jokes that I like to share with my audience. And I've been hearing through back channels that we get more people tuning in all the time just to hear my dad jokes at the end. So I will try not to disappoint. So, oh my gosh, I had them laid out here. Oh yes. So I used to, for years I played the trumpet growing up. And that was pretty good until I had to learn to play with braces, which was a whole different story. But I did it for 4 years through high school with full band. So I still don't know how I did it. It was crazy. Let's just say the inside of my mouth was something like mush. But the question is, what is the most peaceful musical instrument out there? But to be honest, I don't know, but violins isn't the answer.
Violence.
Yes. Luke, and then
Luke still looks confused.
I missed that one. Yeah, it took me a while. Oh my gosh, that's beyond dad joke. I was like,
And then anyway, and most of my dad jokes have been sort of, you know, job related, such as my favorite. And it's true that I used to work at a bank right out of college and I got fired because an old lady came in and asked one day to check her balance. So I pushed her over. But this one is, I had an offer to invest in a company that makes crystal balls, but I could not see a future in it. So I decided to pass on that. So Those are your dad jokes for the week. Thank you very much. Let's
Thank
move
you very much for that.
Let's move on to
podcast isn't video.
Well, usually people are muted and you can't hear them laughing, and it just sounds like went over like a lead balloon. But I can see people laughing, you can't hear them, so I always have to elucidate that. So thank you for contributing your laughter to the podcast, Luke. Let's move on to you.
Yeah, sure. I got two picks today. The first one is kind of a concept where, like, I don't usually get overwhelmed in the web development world. And I think that's because I started late. So always had like that excitement. Didn't have enough time to sort of like wear me down. But recently, you know, I was talking to a whole bunch of guys in the Quasar team, and they're all really smart people. And I just started getting this feeling of imposter syndrome because they're talking about concepts that I can barely understand. And they're talking about different ways of doing things and like what, you know, they're doing in their code bases and how they're organizing it. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not doing any of this stuff. And at the same time at work, we're trying to implement like a nice testing flow, and I need to learn about mocks, you know, and when to use them versus like end-to-end testing and preparing for the podcast, you know, seeing all this stuff about state management. And I just started like getting really overwhelmed. And I think this is common with people in the web dev world where we get this feeling of overwhelm and we feel like we suck. Especially when you're around really smart people, you just start to feel like you suck. And that's what I felt over the past 2 days. And my solution to this is basically going back to why I develop in the first place. So, you know, going back to the reason I write code and why it's really important to me.
Because you need money?
well, no, not really. I mean, I try not to do it, you know, for money reasons. Some people really need to code for money to feed their family. I'm kind of fortunate in that I really love my job. And, you know, I feel like we're making a real impact in the world. And I work for an agriculture company. And I feel like when I sit down to code every day, we really are helping farmers to do a better job in growing their crops and to help them get out of financial stress. Yeah. So anyway, going back to the why helps take it off you and helps you think of like the bigger picture. And it helps you to push through those tough times when you really need to, where you really need to focus in when there's like a whole bunch of different technologies, you know, coming at you. So that's the first thing that I tend to do when I get this feeling of overwhelm, to start with like, why am I doing this? And then from there, I move on to figuring out the what, like what very specifically do I need to focus on right now? So that it's not like, oh, I need to do testing. Oh, my code base is a mess and all state and this and that. And if you can really drill down on what the what is, then you can kind of like break things apart and do them like one step at a time. Kind of like the new Vuex, you know, break things apart more. Yeah. So I guess like that's the first thing I wanted to bring up. Just the concept of if you're feeling really overwhelmed, connecting with why you code and why you love it again, and then figuring out, getting super focused on your what can really help get through that. And the other thing I have to mention is because Kia King has played such a big role in the future of Vuex. So I think Kia King is actually the guy that wrote the RFC, or at least a lot of the RFC for Vuex 5. He's actually got a library called Vuex ORM. And I've been using that for about 4 or 5 years now, I think it is, to manage state. And it's kind of like a layer on top of you, an ORM layer on top of you. So if you're familiar with Laravel, and the ORM, it's very similar to that. And it is absolutely beautiful. It's bliss to use. I never deal with Vuex directly anymore. It's almost always using Vuex ORM. So definitely go and check that out. It's a wonderful project. And it's written by the guy who's, yeah, kind of pioneering Vuex 5, or at least one of the pioneers for Vuex 5. So that would be my two picks.
Thank you very much, as Elvis would say. All right, Joe, being the guest and the best, you're the last. What do you got for us?
How many picks can I do?
I will say as many as you want, but within reason.
Within reason?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So whose reason are we going by?
That's a very good question. Very good question.
I mean, reasonable people don't put themselves through the abuse of writing code. So anyway. See, my first one is I've been doing a lot of research lately on just electric power tools. I've got junk hand-me-down gas-powered string trimmer lawnmower, and I've just been like, I want to get away from this. They're too much of a pain to get started in the spring when they've been sitting around for a long time. So I've been looking a lot into Ego and Ryobi, and I'm just loving the idea of upgrading to electric for those things. My next pick was The Chosen. Don't know if you heard of it.
That's a great show from what I've heard too.
It's a crowdfunded, completely crowdfunded TV show about Jesus and his disciples. And it, if you're a Christian, it's freaking amazing. It's very, very deep storytelling. It's not the normal stoic Jesus and apostles. It's a very, very deep storytelling. It's amazing. They're finishing up season two and they're planning on 7 seasons. And yeah, it's, like I said, it's all crowdfunded. They've raised millions of dollars to make it and still going. So
yeah, I've heard it's got some humorous parts in it too. So it's definitely not quite the stoic storytelling as you were mentioning.
Yeah. Jesus tells jokes.
Chosen. So where is it on? I can't remember. Is it Netflix or
they have their own app. So you can go to the chosen.tv, I think it is. You can watch it for free there, or you can download the app, and then you can actually they have a way of casting it to your TV using the app on your phone.
I'm seeing angelstudios.com/ the chosen.
Yeah, thechosen.tv will redirect to that. Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll drop the links in the show notes. So yeah, I've heard a lot of good things too. I gotta start watching. How many episodes are there in each season?
There's 8 in the first season, and then they've got 5 done in the second season.
Okay.
So far, and they're working on trying to accelerate it. So they want to do a season and a half every year now, as opposed to 1.5 to 2 years per season from what they've been doing. So if we can back it and get it going, we can get this done and actually see the end and enjoy it even more.
Awesome. So how far is it? Does it start right at the beginning of his ministry? Is that where it kicks off?
Just a little bit before, essentially. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Cool. So do you know how many seasons planned out that it wanted to take to cover the 3 years?
Naturally 7.
No, that's true. If it's biblical, 7 is the number of completeness. So,
yep, the plan is to have Jesus's crucifixion at the end of season 6, and then the resurrection and everything in season 7.
Oh, okay, good deal.
This is one of the highest rated TV shows I've ever seen on IMDb.
Yeah,
really.
I don't know if that matters to anyone. It's like, yeah, wow, very interesting.
I've been hearing a lot of about atheists watching the show and really loving it, just because it's that good of a show.
Because it's more about storytelling and telling a good story.
Yep.
Interesting.
And like people see it as it brings the gospels to life. It's not about getting the facts out there. It's about helping you feel the emotions and everything that went on. You see these people as actual people that existed.
Right.
So. Right. And one last pick. The Logitech MX Master mouse series. I got the 2S. I want a 3, but I'm not going to pay money to upgrade for just that slight upgrade.
You got that? Luke showing the 3.
I love it.
I love it too.
The MX Master 2S. Yeah.
Yep. I got the 2S. But so I used to like want all these extra keys on my keyboard, but I realized I use my mouse a lot. And it's really hard to get exactly what you want on a keyboard. So, but this mouse, like, it's got this thumb button underneath at the bottom, and it's got a button just below the scroll wheel that you can set up gestures on. So you can either just tap it, or you can press and hold it and move it in one of 4 directions. And so each of these buttons has 5 functions for me. So it just makes everything super fast for me.
I will second that. It is a wonderful mouse. Even the side scroller, just being able to scroll side to side on like Excel spreadsheets is wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been married to my standard Apple Magic Mouse that I've gotten so used to that I can do most anything with. Have you used the Magic Mouse before? Before you switched to this? Or?
Just because my last job, we did work on Macs, and so I ended up buying a second mouse so I could use one at work. But the Magic Mouse has the charging port on the bottom of the mouse. The
Yes, it
Logitech
does.
Mouse, So you can't use it while you're charging it. Yes.
Yeah.
This one has it on the front of the mouse. So it essentially is just a plugged in mouse while you're charging it.
Yeah, that is one of the things that sort of I find interesting about the mouse is you can't use it while you're charging the keyboard. You can, because it's on the, you know, I have the one of the wireless keyboards, Bluetooth keyboards, and it's on the back, so you can plug it in and keep using it. But yeah, that always struck me as odd as I put that charging board on the bottom of the mouse.
Something coming from Apple, you would expect them to have thought that through a little more, you know?
Maybe they did think it through and decided that was the best place. Who knows?
The biggest thing I think of is that it will look really attractive in photos if it doesn't have this place where you can plug it in.
Yeah.
Maybe?
That's the only thing I can think of. Or the fact that the sensor on the top is more than just a button. So they have too much of the guts near the front to be able to put a port in the front. But I think that's probably baloney. Yeah, I don't know how many times at work someone's like, oh, shoot, my mouse died. I can't work for a while now. I'm like, well, I'm not using my magic mouse here. You can use mine while yours charges.
Well, yeah, what I usually have to do is just sort of, since my primary computer's laptop, I just sort of have to resort to using the trackpad on the computer for the little while that it's charging.
Yeah, that's not fun. Yeah. Though they do have pretty nice trackpads.
Yes. Yeah, the 2 and 3 and 4 finger stuff you can do is pretty nice. So just takes a little bit of getting used to and a little stretching of the shoulder, but it works. All righty. So let's wrap this puppy up. So Joe, if people want to get a hold of you, where is the best place that they can do that?
You can use the contact form on my website at joezimjs.com or on Twitter at joezimjs.
Right on. So Luke, where can people get a hold of you? What's your Twitter? I should know this, and I don't know it, so I'm embarrassed to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Oh, gosh, I don't even remember. I think it's like at Luke Diebold. At Luke Diebold. But yeah, but the best way to get connected to my stuff is just quasarcast.com.
Oh, yeah, Quasar. You know something about Quasar, right? Yeah. Anyway, we'll go back to just kidding there. We talked to Luke about Quasar in a few episodes ago, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. So with that, we will wrap this up. If you want to get a hold of me, Wonder95 is my magic name everywhere, Twitter, GitHub, etc. So you can scream at me there and tell me how bad my jokes are, or you can tell me how awesome my jokes are, either way. So I know Austin Gill, one of our former podcast hosts, likes to message me and say that was really awful, but it made me laugh. So I feel good. I got both sides of the coin covered there. So with that, we will wrap up this episode of Views on View. Joseph, Joe, thank you for coming and talking about view stores. And we will talk to everybody next week.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.